Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to holistic sex educator, Jenny Keane.
I just think it's such a shame, you know, it's when people talk about shame and sex. Oh, I've never cried in a podcast before, Sheila. This is the first. But, you know, I receive so many messages from people who feel that they're broken.
Yeah.
From people who feel like their relationships are doomed. And actually they think they have no options. And actually there are a multitude of options. And when you give people options, you give them hope. You give them life, and I just think that's so important to do, you know, especially when people are struggling.
This is an episode I've been looking forward to recording for ages, and it didn't disappoint. Jenny talks sexual confidence, the importance of connection. She talks shame and blame, self-pleasure and dirty talk. She also answers your questions on fantasies, sex toys, and she gives us a fascinating insight into orgasm as well. She's so knowledgeable and great crack. And as you'd imagine, this is a conversation for adult ears only. So something to be mindful of as you listen. I absolutely loved it. And I think you will too. Jenny Keane, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So you were responsible for a cucumber shortage in Ireland.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it's definitely what the narrative was. It's funny, you know.
It was gas looking at your Instagram stories around. We have to explain, I suppose, to people who are maybe listening, what are they talking about cucumbers for? So why was there a supposed cucumber shortage in Ireland?
Okay, because I was whole, and it's so funny because some people are thinking like I'm telling people to stick them inside themselves, and that's not what I was doing at all. I was running a sex skills workshop on blowjobs, and as part of that I was also teaching hand techniques. And instead of having a rush of people try to find, you know, suction cup dildos to practice on in terms of going to sex shops, I was like, well, they can just get a cucumber. It's as easy, you know. So I said, you know, bring a suction cup dildo or a cucumber. And
what's a suction cup dildo when it's at home?
So it's like a dildo. It's like a mold of a penis, but it has a suction cup at the end of it. So
all right, okay. You bang it on the table.
You know the way you have the shower, the sponges in the showers that you can stick to the wall.
Oh,
like
yeah, okay,
that.
Okay.
So it means you can stick it. Can you imagine what people do with them? You know, I'm already giving you creative ideas.
We're like 30 seconds in and tips are flying.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So they so everybody who partook of your course had a cucumber or something like that, some sort of phallic
thing. Yeah. Well, I said a cucumber is best because of what we were doing. I was also teaching because a lot of people want to know this. Like, I always go off what people want to know. You know. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm speaking into a black hole. But people want to know about gagging and deep throating, and I was teaching the education and also the what's happening physiologically in the body. And I was saying, you know, a cucumber is best. I had some people saying they had a courgette, and they were just like, the courgette's a bit rough when we got to that section. I was like, that's why I told you to get a bloody cucumber.
Yeah, because courgette kind of
it's a bit rough on the edges, you know.
Yeah, and it's kind of it's thicker.
Well, it's also it's got the ridges, you know.
Yeah, oh, the ridges. Yeah.
So the in the wrong direction.
So are people actually using the cucumbers and the courgettes as, you know, to
demo? Yeah, because it's really, I know it's, you know, some people are like, it's actually easier to practice hand techniques on something that's a bit firmer, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
Especially when it's like anything, when you're new to it, you know, you want to make it as easy as possible. And so for me, I was teaching the hand techniques, and I was like, well, there's no point in me teaching this and having them just watching me, because there's three different types of ways that we learn. You know, some people are very visual, some people are more auditory, and then some people are more kinesthetic, which means they have to actually be doing something in order to learn it. Mm. So what I try to do in the workshops is hit these three areas. You know, obviously I'm talking about what I'm doing, and then I'm showing them what I'm doing. But then the people who need the kinesthetic part of that, it's better for them to be also practicing, because it goes into your body more, into muscle memory.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I'm guessing that the men of Ireland really need, they're probably like, you know, in a lot of ways.
I got a lot of messages from men. Yeah.
Yeah, did you?
I actually, you know, what was really beautiful was I did the blowjob. I did three workshops in a row, which were, so in the summertime, I always do sex skills workshops. And this year I did three in a row, which was, and they kind of built on each other, you know. So the first one was sexual confidence. The second one. I'm saying sex all the time now. The second one was the blowjob workshop, and the third one was a going down workshop. So that was about oral sex techniques and also hand techniques for pleasure for people with vulvas. And after the blowjob workshop, the other one was already sold out. And I had a lot of male partners saying, you know, I had such an amazing time with my partner. Is there a workshop that you're doing where I can learn how to pleasure her and return the favor? I had so many of those messages that I actually opened up a couple of places in the workshop for the guys that were messaging in. I was like, I can't say no to this.
Yeah.
You know?
Ah, and like I said it to you when I met you downstairs, like you're adored. I opened it up on my Instagram last night. I left it a bit late actually, because the amount of messages that have been coming in for you. I mean, I knew that you'd be getting some messages, but I didn't realize the volume. But also a lot of people just saying, I love her. Thank you for having her on, or I'm really excited to listen in. You're really making a difference to people. You've got a huge fan base.
Well, I adore everybody in my community as well. You know, like we've built this very slowly. I always say, like, I'm not working alone. I'm not doing this on my own. And I'm very adamant about saying that, because if it wasn't for the people who are coming into the women, you know, who started off, like, who were brave enough to step into a workshop online, you know, when they didn't know me or they didn't know what I was talking about. And for sex education, I mean, over the last 2.5 years, the word sex education and sexual wellness has really become a lot bigger and a lot more known and a lot more talked about in the open. 2.5 years ago was absolutely not like that. So people who were willing to step into a space where, you know, they were still maybe nervous or terrified that I was whipping off my pants and showing them how to, you know, orgasm by sticking my own fingers up myself, you know, which is absolutely not what I do. I mean, people they were big worries for people back in, you know, in 2020 when I started the workshops online. And it's because of the women who were turning up there, and they were, you know, willing to share with their friends, willing to open up and have these conversations with their girlfriends, with their partners, that this started to ripple, you know, over the last couple of years. And, you know, I always say, I'm very engaged with my audience. I try to, you know, reply to DMs every now and again. And now it's a lot harder because I receive so many of them. But if people are coming into my workshops and they're returning over and over over and over again, and they're engaging in the chat box. I start to know their names. They, you know, so they're, we're developing a relationship. And I always say that, you know, I'm only doing what I'm doing because they're participating in the conversation that we're having it together, you know. And I wouldn't be doing this if I was speaking into a black hole. It's because I'm getting feedback. The workshops that I create are workshops based off of what the people who are engaging with me want to know. You know, it's coming in from the questions that you would receive. And for me, it's always a conversation. I love doing the workshops online and live because in the moment you have this incredible environment. I can't describe it. I never thought that I would be able to do this. I was doing these workshops in person before I went online, and the atmosphere in person is so beautiful, and there's something very sweet and tender and also kind of wild and magical. And I don't mean wild in the kind of crazy sense, but wild as in nature, you know, that free. Wildness, very free. And I kind of thought like, well, that would never translate online. And I was so, it was only because of COVID, you know, that I even went online in the first place. And from the first workshop, I was like, my goodness, like there's something really powerful about being in this space as well.
And I think online for the type of work that you're doing like that, it gives people that who may be reluctant to buy a ticket and you know, a turn up at a venue, they can do it in the privacy and the secrecy of their own home, and they can learn that way. And there's a real comfort in that, because again, the reason I think I was surprised, but I pleasantly surprised by the messages was, even though I said obviously they're anonymous, but still it would require someone to share something maybe that is a difficulty or a desire, and you're putting yourself outside your comfort zone. But what it's showing to me is that people really want to have these conversations. They want to feel better in their bodies. Now, you're saying in the last few years, I'm wondering, like, because it feels like you're the one unlocking something within us that a lot of people have been craving for some time. Is there something else happening? Like, why is there this shift now? It's a positive one, obviously.
Yeah.
But what's happening, do you think?
Oh, you know, I think it's much larger than me. I mean, there's always, you know, many things going on around, you know. So like in 2019, we started to see the beginning of people talk like a lot more. Like, I've obviously been following this journey even before it was online. So in terms of people speaking about sex education in an online setting, we started to see kind of an explosion of pleasure positive and pleasure-based sex education becoming quite available online in a way that it was never available before. And then obviously in 2020, I think with lockdown, we had this amazing, as hard as it was in so many ways, we had this amazing kind of, I suppose it's like the perfect chemical reaction for suddenly people to be aware of wellness on all areas. So people became more aware of mental wellness. They became more, they understood the importance and the priority that needed to be given to things like emotional wellness and physical wellness, right? And I always say that like sexual wellness is not separate from all of that, even though it's had less airtime in the past. And that's down to so many things where it's, you know, just in, you know, there's never been it's hard, you know, to have a conversation about something that has never been conversed in public and in open spaces before. So nobody had the language, but here we started to have the language about a year beforehand. And then in 2020, as I said, this perfect kind of chemical reaction where people were like, hold on a second, sexual wellness is just as important here, you know. And people were starting to ask the question, you know, when they're suddenly with their partner 24/7, you know, how do we maintain closeness? Or actually there's a recognition that maybe there is a disconnect and there is a separation and there is a distance between people, and that's felt because they were suddenly in the same space. So people were asking the questions like, how do we repair this? How do we move towards connection? What are the options? And then people who were on their own and weren't able to date were suddenly asking, well, what about me? What can I do for myself? And there became, it was a huge explosion on the kind of, I suppose, eye on self-pleasure and the importance of self-pleasure in that time as well. So I think there was many things around it. I think I just was very primed in terms of the work that I was doing to And in the way that I was offering it, suddenly people were coming in throes. Like I said in the sexual wellness workshop, so I did orgasm online for the very first time in April 2020. And that was actually only born out of the fact that I was due to do an in-person orgasm workshop in the Fumbly Stables, actually. Oh, yeah. And I put an email out to everybody that was there, 23 women. And I said, look, I know we're supposed to be in person, but everyone's doing this thing on Zoom. We could try it. If it doesn't work, should be out locked down in 6 weeks. So it's grand. We can do it all. We can do it. And they were all like, I've been waiting for 4 months. They were all on the list for since before Christmas. And they were like, we need this information now. So do it online. And we can, if it doesn't work, we'll come in person. So I put the rest of the tickets up on Instagram, just to my community at the time. And I had like 2000 followers at this point. And those tickets went in a flash. Then I had people saying, can you do it again? I missed the tickets. So I put it on a couple of days later. Those tickets were gone in a flash. Then someone said to me, Jenny, just up your limit on Zoom and to 500. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, I'm not going to do like 500 places. I don't need to pay for that, you know? And they were like, just do it. Those 500 places were gone. Then the next workshop, I had 800 women at it. And so it was a ripple.
Wow.
And, you know, yeah. And just to say as well, like very clearly, I can't do any advertising. I can't do any marketing online because of the rules and restrictions when it comes to the language that you use around sexual wellness and sexual education. It's blocked, you know. So,
all right.
So this was all word of mouth. Yeah, it's all word of mouth. So on Facebook and Instagram, for example, you can run ads when they're in line with sexual health. So if I was advertising condoms, I could say, you know, used to prevent unwanted pregnancies, but I couldn't say, you know, these condoms for her pleasure, that's not allowed, you know.
All right, okay. The pleasure bit is the pleasure.
It's the health bit that's allowed, the pleasure bit that's not allowed.
I went to my phone straight away there because, you know, we've got a lot of questions in for you. But one that really jumped out, this is the thing that keeps running around in my head. I've heard you speak about this in an interview and you're very quick to say, I don't necessarily agree with the statement. It's not necessarily an Irish thing. You're constantly asked, are we very repressed as an Irish, or as Irish people? Sexually repressed. And there's a question here that I think reflects it. You're quick to say it's not necessarily just an Irish thing, and actually that there's a real, clearly there's a real appetite for what you're about. So people want to open up the conversation. But this, I think, is an important one to address, because I think shame is a huge player in the conversation of sex in Ireland. So the question is, can I amputate the shame that was attached to me within me by being raised a woman in Catholic Ireland?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's it.
Absolutely.
It can happen.
Yeah. And I'm quick to jump in because I think a lot of when people say, you know, are Irish people sexually repressed? Because I, and I say this because I used to teach these workshops all over the world. And when I came home, I never thought to teach them in Ireland because I was like, oh, sure. Ireland, like Irish people aren't going to want to hear about it. This is the narrative. This is what we're told. Irish people are sexually repressed. And actually, we're told that it's a worldwide view that has that. It's not just Ireland itself.
Yeah.
You know?
And I suppose if we're putting that label on ourselves,
then, I mean, where does that go in the future? You know, and what I'll say is that, like, it was never my experience. Once I came home and told, like, my close friends, first of all, what I was doing, because they asked, not because I learned, you know, a lot of people were like, I never knew. Some of my best friends knew I was doing this, but some of my other friends, wider friends, would be like, I never knew you were doing this. I thought it was just the yoga. And I'm like, well, it was safe to talk about yoga. It wasn't very safe to talk about what I was doing, because there's a lot of projection, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of, oh my goodness, sure. I say the story as well, like my sister at one point called my mum when I was in a training, and she said, I think Jenny is in a sex cult, and she's there, you know, preparing, you know, plane tickets to get me out, you know.
No way.
My mum rings me and says, right, now I just need to know exactly what you're doing, because your sister is currently looking at flights and she thinks you're in a cult. And I was like, I'm not in a cult, Mom. I'm in a training. And I sent her all the details, and she's like, okay, great. And I have fun. And I said, I think it's the best training I've ever done in my life. And she was like, that's brilliant. You know, so my mum has always been a massive advocate. She's also been like very future thinking, and always has been. And
so you came from a household that talking about sex was very normal and very healthy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. As a young kid, like I was at the dinner table, my parents were talking about sex, talking about their sexual attraction for each other, and adding comedy in as well, adding humor in. Now, I will say,
That's not the experience of
a lot of people. No.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Yeah, it isn't. It's not. No.
So it's lovely to hear that.
It is. And also as well that like them being Irish, you know, as well. I mean, this is where I say like I don't agree with the label of Irish people being repressed. Also because, you know, as I said, I was teaching this all over the world. When I did start teaching in Ireland, there is a quality to Irish people, to their sense of curiosity and their willingness to lean in to, you know, conversations and situations that can make a lot of people uncomfortable, make them feel awkward. There's still this ability to lean in. And I always say, you know, with our history, you know, I mean, our sexual history is only one channel with our history across the board. You know, we've seen such darkness like in our history, but Irish people have this innate ability. Like you look at storytellers, you look at poets, you look at writers, like you look at anybody that's talking, you know, and comedians, there's this ability to add humor and inject comedy into some of the darkest parts of our history, and what that does is it also to find beauty in that as well, and that's something I have to say. I've traveled all around the world. I have not seen that quality existing in other nations, and this is why I refuse to let people say we're sexually repressed.
Okay,
because what I found is that once Irish people are given the channel to have an open conversation, once they're given just even a small little bit of language around how to communicate around sex effectively, or even just seeing, I suppose for me, for a lot of people, they see me speaking openly, they see me sharing a lot of things which people would be like, geez, you're very brave for sharing it. And what they're seeing is inspiration. It's like, oh, it's okay to talk about anal sex. It's okay to talk about pegging. It's okay to here's someone
What's
doing
pegging?
It. We'll get to that.
Write down pegging. What is pegging? Here's my lovely brain going, putting clothes on the line. That's where I've gone.
There we go.
It's a nice dry day.
Yeah.
Putting clothes on the line.
Well, it's not.
Is it sexier than that?
It's very sexy, okay. Yeah. And there's a lot more fluid involved.
All right. Ready.
The opposite of drying. So, yeah, and this is what I would say. And what I would say to, you know, to anyone that experiences this shame that's held in their body, and maybe they feel it as, you know, I always say, you know, when we're people talk about like sexual revolution, and I talk about it as well. I say like, there's this thing that a lot of people quote me on, I think in the media, where they say, you know, Jenny came back to start a sexual revolution. And I say this, it sounds very big, you know, but what I'm talking about is that, you know, before revolution happens at a national level, it happens at an individual level first. It's the small changes that happen inside of yourself that maybe bring you closer to yourself or bring you closer to parts of yourself you haven't met yet, you know.
Yeah.
And that starts to ripple into family, into friends, into community. That ripples into larger communities, and that ripples to national levels, and then that ripples to global levels as well. That's how revolutions start. And so what I always say is that when people are experiencing the shame that's held inside of them, you know, that shame can come from a national level and move into the individual, and it can also start in the individual and move into a national. And there's always this conversation happening between, you know, what's big and what's small and what's big in that sense. And it's about understanding the relationship. If someone is feeling that there is shame inside of their body, regardless of where it's coming from, right? Whether it's, you know, our Irish history, or whether it's something that happened to them in childhood or as a teenager, or someone saying some small thing to them, you know, that they've carried with them. The fact that you can feel that you're holding that shame is the beginning of everything, the awareness around it.
Yeah.
And people don't, I think, bring enough celebration to the awareness of that feeling inside of themselves. And once you have that awareness of that feeling, yes, of course, it's possible to change, because you are in charge of what is inside of your body and what isn't. You know?
See, I love this, because I'll be honest, I get this question. Mm. Like, I get it very much, because I suppose went to, you know, a Catholic school. The sex talk was very layered, and I felt like the language around it was all about the dangers.
Yeah.
The dangers of sex, you know, and the pleasure bit was never brought into it. But I feel as a woman now in my 40s, I'm in a really good place with it all. Like, mm-hmm. I really am. But it didn't happen overnight, and I did have to look at it. I did have to examine it.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of pull back the curtain on it in a way and look at it and say, what is my relationship here with sex? You know, where does this come from? And I suppose really it's about taking your power back, isn't it?
Absolutely. And this is what I say about sex education. You know, what I found in my own journey, in my own discovery of everything that I know now is that everything starts with, first of all, the awareness, right? The awareness brings you to questions. And so that woman, is it possible to get rid of the shame? That question is important because that question is a movement towards curiosity, and that curiosity is openness. And that openness will become an invitation for change later on. Mm-hmm. If you haven't got the openness or the invitation, or if you don't have the openness, you don't have the invitation. And so that starts with questions. I always say curiosity is absolutely everything in this. Like when people say, like, how did you get into this work? I'm like, I can't even answer that question because it's not a linear answer. Because what I did was I asked the questions that I was feeling in my body, and they weren't linear questions. They were bringing me over here. It looks like a tree, you know, like branches on a tree, literally growing everywhere. But what it did is that it all funneled down inside me, like this one body, you know, and this is where everything is coming from. But all of those questions came from myself first. I think, you know, people say about, you know, the idea of sex, like, and does sex get better as you age? And I think it absolutely does. If you talk to anybody, right? I talk to people who are older.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And why does 100%. Why does it get better as you age?
Because you get more comfortable in your own skin,
exactly.
I feel.
Yeah. And that's it. Sex gets better as we age, as we become more self-accepting. And the more self-acceptance that we have, the more confident we are. Because I always say, I in this workshop about sexual confidence that I did, I said confidence is actually connection. Mm. You feel confident when you feel connected.
Big time,
right?
Yeah.
So think about like body confidence, for example, right? When, like, I still have weeks like this. Like I say, like, confidence isn't something that you arrive at and stay at for the rest of your life. It's this thing that you kind of, you know, touch every now and again, and then you come away from, you know? So it's like you're always moving towards it and away from it and then towards it again. And for me, it's allowing that to be, you know, the fact of life, right? It's this beautiful wave, right? It's not something that we're there and we're there forever. So for me, confidence is more about connection. And when we talk about, you know, body confidence, the times where I move more and eat well, I feel connected to my body, because those are the things that help. Movement for me is really important for me to be connected to my body, more than, you know, people say like nature is really important for me. Movement is the most important thing for me. When I'm moving my body, I feel connected to my body. But there are weeks where, you know, work gets on top of me and I move less and I eat more. And because I haven't got time, I eat more takeaways. And then that makes me feel disconnected from my body. And then I'm not feeling as confident. So I'm less likely, if I'm on a day or if I'm dating somebody, to wear lingerie that night, right? So for me, I prefer to get fully naked rather than be like, don't look at me in clothes, you know?
Okay.
Whereas on the weeks when I'm, you know, feeling connected to my body, I have time, I've made time for myself, I've, you know, eaten the food that makes my body feel good. I've moved in the way that makes my body feel good. It doesn't, my size or my weight has not changed, but the way that I feel means that I'm more confident because I'm connected. And that has a ripple like effect into what I'm willing to do sexually as well, right? I would say it's the bedrock, you know.
Yes, I'm fascinated with because we've been talking about confidence on the podcast recently as well, and you know, when you hear the word confidence, sometimes that can you know, some people can listen to it going, oh, I don't know, I'm not confident, I'm struggling with that. I'd love to be more, but I don't know if you agree with this, but I would wonder. I think sometimes when it comes to not just sexual confidence, because they're all intertwined, but confidence in life, it does require you to be vulnerable.
Mm, absolutely.
Because once you allow yourself to maybe, I'm going with the flow here, I may get it right, I may get it wrong, but you know what, I'm going to give it a go and this is me, and you get a bit more comfortable at, you know, getting it right or getting it wrong, mm-hmm. and therefore maybe be flawed.
Absolutely.
You actually build, am I right in thinking you build confidence that way?
Yes. I always say before confidence comes safety. Between safety and confidence is competence or practice, right?
Okay.
So the foundation of confidence is...
And safety is huge.
Safety, yeah. But when we talk about safety, I think a lot of people have this connotation, and rightly so, because especially when we talk about sex, when we've been given fear-based education, we kind of we've only been told that sex is dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are engaging in sex and suddenly thinking, God, if I add the word safety into anything to do with sex, it becomes boring, right? And it's a very interesting thing. You ask people about
this. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I can see why they would think that. I wouldn't. But I can see why.
Some people do, yeah. And then, but it is the bedrock of absolutely everything, because what safety is a feeling of, again, being in your body, being safe to feel what your body is feeling, right? And also feeling confident enough, feeling competent enough to be able to respond to what it is that you're hearing. Mm. So if you're in a situation, to be able to hear the no and then say the no, that's a huge skill for a lot of people, to be able to hear the yes and then express the yes, right? So that all comes from safety. The practice bit of it is the bit that, you know, it's like confidence is like a muscle, right? Like you have to keep working on it. So I always say, like when we talk about sex as a skill, it's to highlight the fact that a lot of people think that when we approach sex, we all know what we're doing, right? But how do we know what we're doing? We've never been taught, we've never been told, we've never actually had real life representations of what sex looks like in the real world, because our ideas of it have been given to us by media, not just porn, but also movies, also, you know, music videos. Like I remember MTV growing up and all this kind of thing. So we're, and lyrics of songs, we're literally being bombarded, images in magazines, you know, billboards, we're being bombarded with what sex is, what it looks like, what it sounds like, what it feels like. And so to be able to arrive in your body, in your experience, that's what safety is, right? And to stay there. And the as I said, the sex is a skill thing then is really about understanding that, just like anything in school, right? Some of us have a propensity towards, you know, being very mathematical. Others are a lot more creative naturally, right? But we can all learn, even if we're creative naturally, we can all learn the basics of mathematics. And then if we're interested in that, can keep building on it. And sex is just like anything else. In order to be good at something, in order to be competent, and then in order to move into confidence, you have to practice. Generally, in order to practice, it is important to have like a teacher or a mentor or some way to develop the skills, right? Because we can learn anything. And it's like what someone says, I think someone asked a question, you called this out earlier. At least I've received a lot of questions about, you know, how do I dirty talk, right? Some of us have a natural skill to be able to verbalize and describe like how my body is moving, how my body is feeling, and also to be able to even naturally have the skill towards sexual communication that can describe dirty talk.
Let's stay with this now, because I had this conversation with a pal recently. And yeah, it's an interesting one where, you know, the partner might want her to do it, but she's not quite there yet.
Yeah. So this is
how do you go from not doing it to doing it?
Yeah. So this is the skill part, right? That we're talking about, the competent part before the confidence part. And so first of all, it's acknowledging that as you're learning a skill, you're never going to be perfect right from the very beginning. You're not going to get it 100% right at the very beginning. So I always say sexually confident people, they are willing to make mistakes. They also don't believe that there is a right way or a wrong way to do sex when it comes to, you know, sex. And there's also no such thing as good or bad in that world, right? It all just is, you know? So when it comes to something like dirty talk, for example, as I said, some of us have a natural propensity towards it, and others are just, I mean, for myself, I was never good at talking dirty. I was like, always felt like this kind of cringe inside my body of like, oh my God, this sounds horrific. Like, what am I even saying? Right. And that's okay to feel like that,
in the beginning.
That's in the past.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a constant learner. I'm like, if I'm not good at something, I'm like, this is an invitation to learn more. And so it's,
and everybody's different. Some people might be really into it.
Yes.
So we're all different.
Exactly. So for example, the invitation to talk dirty is actually really powerful when you go on that journey, because it actually brings you closer to what you like and what you don't like. And it also brings you closer to the language around sexual communication, which is really important. And what this also allows you to do is, as you learn, you know, to talk in this way, you also learn how to guide a partner in a way that's still kind of bringing arousal into the moment rather than demands, you know. And so you learn how to kind of, again, it's like the openness and invitation for someone to come closer to you. So, for example, with dirty talking, like what you would be looking at is, First of all, listening to audio porn or reading erotic novels is really important, because in this, most of the time, the thing that stops you, the thing that makes you feel that kind of cringe or awkwardness in the body is the fact that you actually don't know what you're doing. So when you start listening to audio porn, when you start reading erotic novels, what you start to do is develop an erotic language and sentences, right? It's like anything. Then what you would do is pick out, what I would advise people to do is pick out the things that they feel turned on by, the words that turn them on, the sentences that make their body spark a little bit, because it's really important that when you're talking dirty, you're also connected to what you're saying, right? And then what you start to develop is a kind of a language of things that you like to say. And then you write, like, it's really, like, again, it's like, it's, this is like going back to school, right? It's like the homework part of the sex education. Then you write out like little like erotic novels for yourself, or practice saying them on your phone and listen back. Like, you know what I used to do?
Really? So yeah. Would you advise that somebody might get like a notepad or like, yes, have a sex journal?
Oh, I mean, if we could have more like erotica in the world, I just think it would only be good. Yes, everybody get a sex journal and start writing. I'm sure there's some publishers out here that would like to be a part of that. But I think what I started doing, and I found it was even a self-pleasure practice, you know, when someone's like, oh, you know, how can I, you know, spice up my self-pleasure practice, or I feel weird doing it. What I started doing was writing down all of this stuff. I basically then would record on my phone a voice note of basically like me talking dirty or guiding a self-pleasure practice for myself. And then I would play it in my own self-pleasure practice. So in that moment, I was like, where my mind was tired and my brain was tired, and I just wanted to feel like someone was guiding me.
So your own voice would turn you on?
Not that my own voice was turning me on. My own voice was guiding me.
Your guidance within the note.
Well, it was guiding
me towards
my...
I'm just fascinated by this.
Was guided towards my own pleasure. If I listen to a lot of audio porn, because I'm very auditorially stimulated. So, if someone even speaks in my ear, they don't even have to be saying something sexy. I can start to feel the vibrations and the tickles going down my neck, and that moves.
Because obviously, sound is your thing.
Yeah, it's one of them. It's definitely one of them. More than smell would be, and so it's like sound is definitely one of them.
What's the sexiest sound to you? So,
anyone that speaks in a foreign language, I'm just like, I would always be asking my parents, what other languages do you speak? You know. Before we get into bedroom, because I want to know. And then I'm just like, as I'm about to orgasm, if I'm just like, please just like say anything in Spanish to me, anything. It doesn't matter. If you like say, I like bread, like literally my orgasm will deepen and amplify. Like it's crazy, you know? So
Irish work?
I don't know about
Irish.
Are
you laughing?
I have never tried Irish.
Am I not wrong?
Oh my goodness, Sheila.
See? No, this is brilliant. I love it. Because again, you know what makes you tick. You know what works for you. You know what doesn't. And you want people to figure that out for themselves.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And also it's like to say that nothing is weird. You know, like if anyone listens to auditory porn, there's parts of auditory porn I really, really like. But there's some parts, like someone can say one thing that gives me like the ick, you know, and then that's my arousal gone, you know, and then I'm going to have to build it back up again. So for me, when I started doing these memos to myself, like the self-pleasure meditations, I knew the whole way through from start to finish, there was not a moment where my arousal was going to dip because someone said the wrong thing or this wrong sentence for me, you know.
Can I ask you about 50 Shades? And the reason it's just when you say that, I was reminded of going on a holiday with my best pal, and we brought 50 Shades with us, and we were reading it at the same time. It was a lot of laughter. But the one thing that we both found hilarious and actually couldn't find remotely sexy was the constant use of the two words kinky fuckery all the time. It was like, wow, this is so unsexy. Doesn't work. Yeah. So I just found it, but we found it more comical than anything else. And obviously it was like a global phenomenon. The books were, and then the movies and blah, blah, blah. What did you make of all that?
I mean, for me, it just felt, I mean, I totally understand by kinky fuckery. There's kinky some words that people use and I'm just like, yeah, no, please don't ever say that to me.
No. Yeah,
you know,
never.
But also it doesn't even have to be, it doesn't even have to be sexy words. Like I can't, like my body closes when someone says the word babe to me. And you know, when someone's like, oh
interesting,
babe, you know, my body closes instantly. So I'm just like,
where does that come
don't
from?
Don't ever say that word in the bedroom. Please don't.
Does it come from somewhere?
I don't know. I don't know. It's just always happened. You know, I've never enjoyed it. But like other endearing words I really like, you know, but for whatever reason, this word, like it just, you know, the way for some people, it just, that gives me the ick.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the
way
people talk about it. I'm just like, no. And again, this is where I say like pleasure is unique. You know, it's so important that you know yourself, because those, and then it's so important that you're confident enough in yourself. And again, that safety within yourself that you can then express that to a partner so that they're aware of what's adding to and supporting your arousal and your sexual expression rather than closing it down. Right?
Well, expressing it, absolutely. But expressing it seems to be something that also people were asking about, because they struggle to perhaps communicate their needs to their partner. And again, I'm guessing you're going to say it's not just an Irish thing, but is it the people pleasing in us? Do you know when somebody said, what do you like or what do you want me to do? We sometimes tend to hold back and say what it is, or just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I think there's a whole, this is a podcast in and of itself, right?
It's really?
Like, absolutely. I think there's a couple of reasons why people find it difficult to express what it is they like and what it is they don't like. One of the big things is, first of all, the lack of conversation around sex definitely amplifies this.
Okay.
What also is another really big thing is that because a lot of us do not know, and also I suppose it has been cultivated out of us, that we are mostly a society that works off numbing ourselves out in many ways, right? And that's very easy to do. A lot of people don't have access to the sensations and feelings and also the yes and no response in their body, right? So we actually don't know what we like and what we don't like. Then because of the lack of conversation and the lack of openness around sex, and especially for women, we learned from a very young age to hide our sexual pleasure. Like you think about being a kid, right? And we're being quiet, we're hiding our orgasm, you know, we're having to, you know, lock ourselves in a room or go under the covers and not hardly move, hardly express in any way, shape or form. So we've been taught from a very early age to hide our sexuality, and the lack of conversation means that women were not encouraged to masturbate or to self-pleasure. And when you're not masturbating, when you're not self-pleasuring, it's actually very difficult to know what it is that turns you on and what it is that turns you off, the type of touch that turns you on, the type of touch that turns you off. And how about like at different moments in your cycle, like at different times in your cycle where you might respond different ways, or different times in your life where there's more stress in your body, and the type of touch you like in that moment in time. A constant connection to self-pleasure is going to keep you connected to your body, connected to the way that your body responds. And in that, you are able to better express to another person what you like and what you don't like. Most of us learned from a very early age, especially as women, to give our pleasure and to put our pleasure in the hands of somebody else. So that's why when someone says, hey, tell me what you like, most of the time people go, I like what you're doing, just keep doing that, because they don't actually have the language. Even if they might like what the person is doing, so I'm not saying anything about this, but the fact of the matter is that most people don't go any further than this because they've never learned the language that their body is speaking to them. So when you don't learn that language, it's very hard to know what it is your body is saying. It's very hard to talk back to your body, and it's very hard then to express what it is your body is saying to another person. That's where I say dirty talking is actually really good. Like, it's a good skill to cultivate, because what you're learning is a sexual language, right? A way to say to somebody, I really like when you take your thumb where you like wet it with your mouth a little bit as you're looking at me in my eyes, and then you start to circle or orbit your thumb around my clitoris really slowly, really softly, and as they're moving, it's like, yeah, just like that, even slower. And you're starting to learn this amazing language, like in learning the skill of dirty talking, in order to guide your partner. There is not a person in the world, Sheila, that likes to be guided. We're very busy people. We have a lot on our mind all of the time. When someone is guiding you, right, you get to shut your mind off. This is why I talked about the voice memos, the self-pleasure voice memos. You get to switch your mind off. You get to be guided by somebody else's voice. Somebody else is guiding your journey. You don't have to think about what you're doing. You're just listening and responding. And that helps you to move into somewhat of a place of passivity while still being active. And that that kind of, opposition in the body and the experience of those two opposing, um, those those two opposing, I suppose, activities in the body actually create sexual tension in the body, which can heighten your arousal. So there's many ways then to experience arousal. This is one of them, you know. And if someone is confident in what they're saying to you, the more confidence they can bring, the safer you feel, following their lead. And again, this is something that, like, it's something that you cultivate. It's something that you practice. And as I said, at the base of all of this, it's so important to allow for mistakes to happen. Mm. It's so important to allow for people to say the wrong thing, for someone to do the wrong thing, and for those things to be at the baseline. And I always say it's really important to add humor in, which Irish people do so, so well, I have to say. Mm. Really important to add humor in to the conversation and to the exploration around sex, because then you're setting yourself up for connection.
And then it's and also you're inviting more play.
Absolutely.
Isn't that it?
Yeah.
Isn't that good? So if you're somebody who wants to step outside your comfort zone and ask for what you want, is it also good to invite your partner to also tell you? I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
It goes both ways.
Yeah, but I think it's, again, that's an individual to the partners themselves, right?
Okay, yeah.
One thing that you can't do, I get this question a lot, like if people are on their sexual exploration journey and their partner might not be so interested, they're like, how do I, you know, bring my partner into this? Mm. Like, how do I get my partner involved? And it's like, actually the difficult answer to hear is that you can't force people towards sexual exploration. That has to be something that they arrive at themselves. So, you know, if someone, for example, if I get this message a lot again from men, or like my partner doesn't feel confident in her body anymore after having our babies. I still think she looks so beautiful and so sexy, and I tell her all the time, but she's just not, she just doesn't seem to respond or believe me. You know, what can I do? And I'm like, well, in that situation, if your part, there has to be an openness and again, a willingness to receive what it is that you're saying. Otherwise, that's a guard up or a block up, and there's actually nothing that you can do other than continue to show your support, show your care, show and kind of keep going, which is often very hard when you're being faced with what feels like rejection over and over and over again. But it's up to the other person on the other side to be open to receiving that, you know. Yeah. And that's things that they have to do on their own side in order to be willing to receive and even be able to hear and take that into their body, you know.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Again, that's kind of back to the personal responsibility bit that, you know, sometimes we can, I know that people, you know, in relationships that are maybe not fulfilling sexually can say, you know, he or she is just not doing it for me. But, you know, where is that person in the mix then?
Yeah, well, it's actually really interesting when we talk about shame. So we get mostly two responses when it comes to the experience of our sexuality. Like, we'll either have the shame where something happens, like a sexual issue happens. We'll either take it in a shame where it's in our body and we think that there's something wrong with me. Or the other way that we can kind of experience it is push it out into blame, right? So we either take it into shame or or out to blame. And in both those circumstances, there's not a conversation happening with our sexuality or our sexual desires. It's just a way to kind of disconnect from it, right? So the idea of noticing when you're going into either of those responses and coming back to the center, right, of being like, okay, what does it look like to stay connected to the experience of my sexual self in this moment is really important. A lot of people in like partnered relationships find it very difficult to hear. The first and foremost thing that you need to be doing in order to kind of keep your connection with your own sexuality up is self-pleasure and masturbation, right? Because they're like, oh, but I want to include my partner. I don't get as much enjoyment from self-pleasure as I do with a partner. And it's like, okay, that's fine. But there is more to know, right? There's more to learn. So it's like uncovering the layers. There's times when I'm experiencing self-pleasure and kind of solo sex periods where there's a part of me that's like, oh, geez, I better start connecting with other people because this is becoming so satisfying. I'm not going to need anybody, right? So it's always about maintaining balance, right? And
that's a good one. Can I ask? I'm sorry for cutting across you, so if you're somebody who has a very satisfying sex life, so you don't feel the need to self-pleasure, are you losing out?
No, this is what I say, okay. Right? Your sexuality, sexual wellness doesn't mean that you're in this state of bliss and ecstasy all the time, that you're having loads of sex, whether it's with your partner or whether it's with loads of people. It doesn't mean that, right? To be sexually well is to be able to move between states of, you know, grief and pain and pleasure and ecstasy at this, like, and to move between those states is to be able to experience ease and experience stress and not to be stuck in either of them, but to actually swing. So you're learning how to engage with your sexuality, engage with yourself on a day-to-day basis based off of who you are. There are periods where that we all go through where we just don't have a desire for sexual intimacy or penetration, right? If you're in hetero relationships, and it doesn't mean that you're not sexual. It also doesn't mean that you're broken. It's almost like, you know, have you heard those, the way people talk about being seasonal, right? Especially as women, we all go through these seasonal stages. And so the idea of being in a place where your sexual energy is more for you is almost like being in the kind of seasonal stage of winter, right? Where there's still life, there's still movement. It's just not on the surface. It's just not seen. It's all happening underneath the surface. And what's happening in winter is there's that energy that's being collected. And it's the same thing when we maybe haven't got a desire to share our sexuality with ourselves or with other people. It's that energy is still present. It's still there. And it's just very, very internal. And there will come a time again where spring comes, right? Where the bud starts to crack and then starts to open into towards the earth. And then we have summertime, which is, you know, come get me. I'm ready, right? And so we do have these seasonal phases sexually as well. And I think, you know, this is where education, I think, is really important, because so many questions that I get, whether it's, I always say people come to this work for one of two reasons, either through inspiration or desperation. So either they're, you know, looking for ways to expand their sexuality, ways to experience orgasm or more orgasm, or they're experiencing sexual issues. Maybe it's an inability to orgasm. Maybe they're experiencing erectile dysfunction with their partner and they don't know how to manage it. Maybe they're experiencing body confidence or body image issues. And again, the problem with the lack of sex education that we received meant that, and this is where it did something really detrimental to us as human beings. I always say our sexuality is an intrinsic part of ourselves. It's as important as our physical, mental, emotional, even spiritual wellness. And when we do not receive pleasure-based education, we do not receive options, right? So when we experience an issue, most people go to the worst case scenario. Exactly. So, you know, oh, my partner and I have mismatched libidos. We haven't had, or my partner and I haven't had sex for, you know, a month or a year or something like this. And they say like, you know, the relationship, either I'm broken or the relationship is broken or he's broken or a combination of all of them. The only option is that the relationship is broken and we have to end, right? The relationship. Mm. Most of the time we go to the catastrophizing situations, right? Because we have had no options. Education, what education does is it gives you options. What options mean is that now you have choice where you never had choice before. What choice means is that now you have agency, which means instead of taking a passive approach to your sexuality, which is what fear-based sex or a lack of sex education gives you, right? The, you know, this is what's happening to you. You just have to ride the wave of it. There's nothing that you can do. That's the passive approach. Now, instead of that, you have the active, the agency, which is the active approach. Now I can do something about it. And that agency is empowerment, right?
Yeah.
So when you put people in a position where they feel empowered, regardless of the situation that they're in, what you're giving them is life. Right? The ability to stay connected, regardless of what it is, whether it's something happened. And this is where it could be the worst thing that you've ever experienced in your entire life. And you know that you still can stay connected to yourself, right? You still can stay connected to the people in your life. And that's what's important, right? Like, that's why I'm a real, like, that's why I'll keep until people are sick of hearing me say it. This is where I'll keep saying sex education is so important, because it's giving, oh, I'm getting emotional now.
Yeah. I can feel it from you.
I just think it's such a shame, you know, when people talk about shame and sex. I've never cried in a podcast before, Sheila. This is the first. But, you know, I receive so many messages from people who feel that they're broken.
Yeah.
From people who feel like their relationships are doomed. And actually they think they have no options. And actually there are a multitude of options. And when you give people options, you give them hope. You give them life. And I just think that's so important to do, you know, especially when people are struggling.
And I know that I'm listening to you speak and I'm really tuning into everything. And I'm also aware that really to have a comprehensive conversation with you, we'd probably need 10 hours. Because we're scratching the surface of so many different things.
Mm.
But orgasm, let's talk about it, because what I felt from the messages, and I couldn't help but feel, I just really felt for a lot of the messages coming through, a lot of people saying, you know, low libido, dissatisfied sexually, but also a lot saying they've never experienced an orgasm.
Hmm.
And can I experience an orgasm?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting when this is actually the first workshop that I ever ran was called Orgasm, and it was specifically for this reason. So I always say, you know, there in the data and the science that we're given is that 40% of women experience sexual issues, and in this order it is the biggest one is low libido and lack of desire for sex. The second one is inability to orgasm or don't know if they've ever orgasmed. And so it's a huge thing, and it's one of the reasons why I began that workshop in particular, because the education around it, even now, is still so limited. I always say, if you haven't orgasmed or you feel like you have never had an orgasm, please watch out for my workshop, Orgasm Online. We do an in-depth dive in it. And what I see most people coming away with is this thing of where they come in thinking they've never orgasmed. And when they've been given the education, they're like, oh, I have. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And so.
But I find that interesting. How would you like, I'm not trying to be flippant now.
No, I know.
I'm not.
Yeah.
But how would you not know? Like, for me, it's such an obvious.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, when you orgasm, it's. I know I'm orgasming.
Yes.
Orgasming. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
I'll just say cum. It's easier. So how would you not know? Is that just the disconnect thing?
There's a couple of reasons for it. Numbness can absolutely be a reason, right?
Okay.
So when we disconnect from our bodily responses, and I mean this like at a very basic level, right? People say like, how do I feel more? I'm experiencing numbness. How do I feel more? And it's like, well, start very simply, right? When you're thirsty, drink. When you need to pee, pee, right? Go pee. Most of us will sit in work until, and even though we might need to pee at 10:45, we wait until 12 or 1 o'clock to pee because that's lunch break, right?
Yeah.
So when we are shutting off our bodily response, our body is saying, giving us messages all the time, like, now you're feeling this and now you're feeling this and now go pee and now you're thirsty, right? And when we are not when we are showing our body, we're not listening to those responses. Our body is trying to be efficient, right? All of the time. It's trying to save energy. So it's like, oh, she's not listening to us. We actually don't need to give her these signals, right? She's just going to go pee when she wants to pee, right? So it will start shutting down these. The problem is that it will also start shutting down other sensations and other feelings. So that's how, it's one of the ways that we can move towards numbness in our lives, right? Mm. And again, just one of the ways. It's a more on the physical level. There's emotional and mental and even spiritual reasons why we can disconnect from our body as well. That's just one of the ways. So one thing that I always say is when you want to feel more, start responding to those responses, right? Because then your body's going to be like, oh, she's listening to us. She wants more responses. And then you start feeling more sensation. And then you, the sensation starts leading you to more experiences of I'm feeling this. And then you respond back, right? So the idea with orgasm, again, not feeling orgasm, as I said, numbness is definitely one of those things. Another reason is that, and it's a very big reason, a lot of women or a lot of people, right, we've been given the idea that an orgasm looks like, sounds like, feels like this, right? And it very much looks like, you know, Meg Ryan in the cafe. And this is really based off a model that was, it's called the arousal model. There's a couple of different names, the stages of arousal that were, that was coined by sex researchers, Masters and Johnston, right?
Right.
They took a whole host of people and what they did was, is they kind of categorized the stages of orgasm, right? And so those were broken into four different categories, which is the initial kind of arousal stage where blood starts pumping to genitals. Then you start to start to feel like a stage of arousal. Then you move into the plateau stage. The plateau stage is where arousal continues to build, right? Then you move into the climax phase, which is where there's a feeling of like an explosion almost. And then you move into the final phase, which is resolution, which is a feeling of complete. Right. This is the type of orgasm that most people are talking about when they're saying, I've never felt that orgasm. Some people can get close to the climax phase and then right before they experience it, they shut it down or they stop or else their body stops. Right. And there's reasons for that as well. But there are other types of orgasms. And because this is the model of orgasm that we have been given, a lot of people are looking for that model and that response happening within themselves. So the problem with that is that that's definitely one model, right? But the thing that most people don't know and don't give anything context is that when scientists and researchers are collecting data and information, they're trying to find the commonalities, which means what they're doing is, you know, batting away where, you know, a woman might experience goosebumps on her body, right? They're batting away the moments where someone might experience like a heat rising, like from their chest into the palms of their hands, or the tingles that you might feel in the palms of your hands and the soles of your feet. They're taking all of these things away because they're trying to find the average, like the mean average. And what we talk about in Orgasm Online is that pleasure and sex is unique to the person experiencing it. Not only is it unique, it's going to change because we're always changing all of the time, right? Mm. So it's about teaching. I teach people how to be aware of what their body, the sensations that someone feels in their body and how to name those sensations, right? So, and that's why, like, my background is in somatic therapy. And very early on, somatic therapy is body-based therapy, right? So I always, for people who don't know, I always say, just like psychology is like talk-based therapy or mind-based approach to therapy, somatic therapy is a body-based approach to therapy, which is, I think it makes sense in the study of sex, right? Or the study of sex, because, you know, pleasure, orgasm, something that you feel in and through the body, right? So it's very powerful. So in these practices, I was combining somatic therapeutic approaches in tantra yoga and teaching people how to feel sensations in their body. And it's really interesting, like the whole curve of what you'd feel like. What I teach in those movement classes, like, very much translate to, you know, sex as well, like sexual experiences, like in the bedroom and whatnot. So it's teaching people how to feel. And when you widen, I suppose, people's frame of reference for what an orgasm is, you invite in more differences, right? Because again, like these these researchers are trying to find the commonalities, you invite in more differences, you invite in more variety, and you include more people. And so then a lot of people are like, oh, I already orgasmed. I just didn't know that was called an orgasm. Mm. Right?
Yeah. Mm. Okay, I just had a quick look at the time and it's absolutely flying by, which isn't surprising, right? But I'm conscious of the fact that people really did open up on Instagram. So I want to get to a handful of questions. So let's go. Right. Where will I go? There's so many. Mm. Okay, I'll go with this one. I fantasize all the time during sex, so much so that when I open my eyes, I'm almost shocked to see my husband. Mm. Is this normal?
Yeah. Yes. That's normal. I mean, the fact that you're... So one thing that I will say is that a lot of people, just to kind of add on to this question, right? A lot of people, when they fantasize, they might fantasize about, you know, different people, for example, other than their husband, or different scenarios. And some people become quite worried about this and they're like, oh my goodness, does that mean, you know, I want to be with somebody else? Or does that mean I don't love my husband anymore? And the one thing that I'd say is, again, this is where education is so important. Imagine if everyone in the world knew this piece of information. I think it would just save so many people and so many relationships. Fantasy is something that starts in the mind, but doesn't necessarily need to or want to be explored in the real world, right?
And is that where the danger happens, if somebody has a fantasy that then they want to bring into real life?
Sometimes, because they're unsure. The difference between fantasy and desire is something that starts in the mind but wants to be explored.
Oh, interesting.
Right? Yeah. So it's understanding. So when people say to me, oh, you know, I'm fantasizing about, you know, I don't know, like my husband's best friend, right? Does this mean that I want to be with my husband's best friend and not my husband? The next step is really getting people to understand, well, is this a fantasy or is this a desire, right? Because the reality of going down that path, right, is very different. So if you were to follow that into a reality where desire is something that you actually want to follow, you suddenly start to realize very quickly whether it's a fantasy or a desire.
Is it hard to figure out which is which?
I don't know if I can answer that actually for people. Okay. I think that's an individual
personal thing. Yeah. It depends, I suppose.
Yeah. Right. I mean, where my mind goes in that is that, you know, well, do I really want to break up my relationship or break up my family? You know, is it even an option to be with my husband's best friend? Like, you know, these are things that you start to go into. And I think, you know, they're interesting explorations. So, but what specifically what this woman was saying in terms of closing her eyes and going into fantasy so much so that she forgets where she is. I mean, that just looks like going into an extremely deep meditative state, right? Mm. Where it's very beautiful. And it depends, you know, maybe she likes being in that place and might likes being in that state, and this is something that brings her pleasure. Or maybe she wants to stay more connected to her husband. So this is something that she could share with her husband and say, you know, sometimes when I close my eyes, I completely disappear into another world and go into fantasy. But I'd like to stay here with you. When you see that happening or when you notice this happening, you know, could you call my name or could you tell me to breathe in deeply 3 times? There is a difference as well, like that I will say, is that some people, a lot of times people, it's one form of a response in the body, that when they close their eyes, if they're not in a fantasy that's actually playing out, they could feel like they're leaving their body altogether, which is a sense of disassociation.
Yeah.
And that's where it's really important to have somebody that's there to guide you back into your body. So if I would ask her, like, is it a fantasy? Like, are you actually playing a movie in your mind? Mm. Would you say you're more so disassociating, where, you know, you close your eyes and then suddenly you wake up and you're like, oh my goodness, I'm having sex. That's a different thing altogether.
Yeah, because when you say that about sharing with the partner, I instantly felt, oh no, don't say that, because they might really be hurt by the fact that you are not being present with them and you're having to fantasize about something else during the time. I suppose that's my own stuff.
Yeah,
because maybe if somebody said that to me, that I would feel like, why can't you think of being with me right now? Because why are you fantasizing when I'm here? I would just be worried that there might be a bit of hurt there.
Absolutely. I think, so first of all, I would say as well, you don't have, it's not important and it's not a must that you have to share every single fantasy with your partner. But what you could say, instead of saying I'm fantasizing and I'd like to be here with you, is that, you know, oh, I recognize that I disappear and I'm not really in my body, right? So you're not actually saying you're in a fantasy at all, right? So I'm not here, I'm not really in my body.
I get you.
And I think as well, like when you're saying like, I'd like to stay connected to you, I don't really know why I'm not being in my body, but I'd like to stay connected to you. Will you help me, right? Okay, or can you, you know, can that be something that you support me in, right? When you make something an invitation to someone, I've never had a refusal when it's an invitation. If it's a demand, right, it's something different, right? Like if you're saying like, hey, like, you know, I'm like, whenever we have sex, like I'm just like fantasizing about something else the entire time, you know, like what's going on there? Or, you know, can you like, you know, and you leave it at that, right? There's no invitation at the end of that sentence. Then of course your partner's gonna be like, oh my goodness, like I must not be good at sex, right? Like you're going into the shame or the blame.
Right.
I must not be good at sex, or oh my, like, am I doing something wrong? Oh my goodness, I'm not good enough. Or else you're going into, well, why are you fantasizing about someone else? You know, like, can you not be fantasizing? Like, so then now you're in a place of disconnection rather than connection, right?
Yeah, yeah. Before I get to the next question, I have circled pegging. I need to know what pegging is.
Pegging is when you, for example, if you were with anybody, a man or a woman, and you wear a strap on and you're having anal sex, basically. So a lot of the times it's a term within heterosexual relationships. It doesn't have to be limited to heterosexual relationships, where a man is receiving pleasure through penetrative sex, basically through his anus. And the woman is wearing a strap on with a dildo. That's what pegging is.
Wow. Now I know.
Now you know.
Nothing to do with drying the clothes.
No. You need a lot of lubrication.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dry is not good.
No.
Nah,
definitely not good. Yeah.
Right. Well, let's stay with this now, because sex toys. Lots of questions about sex toys.
Okay.
Can Jenny give advice about sex toys? I've never used one. I have a good sex life with my partner, but am I missing out?
I can't answer whether you're missing out or not. But what I will say is that sex toys are tools, right? And tools are, and as sex, as tools, they're really powerful ways to experience different types of sensation, to experience different opportunities, to experience different ways to have an orgasm or feel pleasure, right?
Okay.
And I think as well, like on the market, we have a wide variety of toys that you basically can do anything with, right? And for me, it would be looking at, in terms of the introduction of sex toys into your sex life or relationship, I always say, like, it's very hard, right, when you have so much on offer to know which is best for you. It's almost actually overwhelming to have so much choice. So I would be like teaching people to ask questions like, you know, what is your intention, right, behind adding in a sex toy? What orgasms are you currently having? What orgasms would you like to experience more of? Or what orgasms are, so you know which areas you need to stimulate. So that like determines whether you get a clitoral vibrator or a vibrator that maybe an insertable, like for a G-spot orgasm or something that goes a little bit deeper so that you can start to hit cervical orgasm, or a sex toy for anal pleasure, right? So you have
so many questions.
Yeah, there is. There's so,
so many questions. With sex toys, it's fascinating. Again, there were a lot of questions about this. But a question I have is, you know, can the use of sex toys spoil you in terms of, so if somebody is using them and really getting the best out of them, mm-hmm. and getting, you know, and bringing about huge amounts of pleasure, does that create an issue in a physical sexual relationship then?
So what it can do is that it's possible for the body to become reliant on sex toys, a certain like type of touch and with, coupled with a very high, intense setting, right? Vibration.
Okay, yeah.
This is talking about orgasm habit, and this can happen with absolutely anything, right? We all have we're habitual creatures, right? So we all create habits and form habits, and you know how difficult it is to break a habit, right?
Yeah.
It takes time, it takes practice, it takes a whole lot of patience, right? So what can happen with anything? So it doesn't even just have to be a particular toy, right, that you use, for example. It could be a particular position that you get used to. It could be a particular type of touch that you get used to. And when you drive that as your pleasure pathway over and over and over and over again, this can become the only way that you orgasm, right? And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. If that's how you orgasm every single time and you enjoy it and you want that again and you don't want to change it, absolutely nothing wrong with this, right? Mm. But if it is something that you want to experience different types of orgasms or different ways that you can approach orgasm, then this is when it becomes an issue, right? It only becomes an issue then, right? Because what will happen, again, as I said, it's like creating, like you're digging a road, right? Like if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, the deeper that groove gets, right? And then okay. The harder it is then to move towards a different way of pleasuring. And what people find in the beginning is that I always talk about it like when you're driving to work, right? People get used to doing something the same way. So it's kind of like when, you know, you're driving to work the first time, you're very aware of everything, all the sensation or all the lights, all the people walking, where you need to stop, where you can go, where the traffic might, you know, is starting to pile up. So you're aware of everything the first time you drive to work. And there's almost like a sense of like being a little bit lost and not entirely knowing your way. When you drive to work after a first couple of times, have you ever had this experience where you know where you're going, you get in your car and then suddenly you wake up at work. There. And you're like, whoa,
how did that happen?
Yeah, did I break any lights, you know? And you didn't, because what happens is, again, your body is always trying to work for you. It's trying to be to use your energy efficiently. So it knows that route so much. You've driven that route so much. Your mind knows how to get you there. Your brain knows how to get you there. Your body, in terms of like, you know, the reflexes, like the way that you're driving, the way your feet move, all that kind of stuff is working together to know how to get you there because you've done it so many times. So when you start to drive a different route, suddenly it's like, oh Jesus, like what if we get stuck in traffic? We don't know how long it's going to take to get there. And it's very easy for us to kind of always want to drive the same route. It's the same with orgasm. When we drive the same route over and over and over again, suddenly it becomes so habitual and so known in our body that the idea of expanding it into a different way of orgasming, you know, whether that's using a different toy or whether that's using a different position, like if you're used to, you know, orgasming quite a bit, a missionary, to then try and orgasm when you're on top, right, is going to take you a while. And what tends to happen is your body will start to crave what it knows. So then you'll start to feel this kind of like, I always experience it in my body, like I guess it's sucking, where it's like, you know, like come back over here, like we know what we're doing, we know how to get you there, right? So this is why one of the things that I say when I'm talking to people about, you know, having better sex is to remove the goal of orgasm. When you remove the goal of orgasm, it takes the pressure off, absolutely, but it also opens you up to more experiences, more sensations than you've known. So it's again, like, you know, deciding to go a different way to work or deciding to go a different pathway on the walk, you're more open to like, oh my God, look at that flower. Oh, look at that beautiful tree, right? You become aware of things because you've never been there before. So it's about learning how to enjoy the journey rather than the destination of now I've orgasmed.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. Brilliant advice. This whole episode has been full, packed with brilliant advice. I'm absolutely gutted to say that we've run out of time. I can't believe that we have, but we have. And I've only got through a teeny tiny amount of the questions. The only thing is, within the conversation, you actually did tackle a lot of the topics and questions that arose from the questions that came in on Instagram. And I suppose final words maybe of advice.
What I think is really beautiful is that, you know, I mean, I definitely have so many words, right? But I think what's really powerful is that, you know, I always think like that change happens when we actually really begin to take in the information, right? Like right now people are listening to this and, you know, I think things start to change, things start to happen when you actually start to honor like what it is that's already going right for you right now, right? So it's like that celebration piece is really important. So if people are listening to this, I would like, what are the top three things you would celebrate about your sex life right now in this moment? And then maybe what are the top three things that you would like to experience, right? Because now what you have is a really solid base of, yeah, like I'm good, like my body is good, I'm good. And then what you have is a kind of a pathway of like where you might want to go. And I think that's really where you get the benefit of these conversations. So I could definitely say, you know, three things, but I always say, people always ask me like, what are the best tips? What are the tips and tricks? But the tips, like, again, we already know them. The people listening to this episode already know the tips. Slow down, learn to make non-goal oriented time for yourself, a body part or a partner, right? Learn to remove the goal of orgasm. But these are absolutely worthless when you haven't got the foundation or even the mindset to allow pleasure into your life. So celebration is a really powerful practice for that, right? Because in celebration, what you're doing is honoring the pleasure that you already feel, right?
Yeah, I love that. It's like the practice of gratitude, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's another really powerful pleasure practice, right?
Okay, yes.
So learning, again, as I said, you know, for the next day, for like the whenever you've listened to this, spend the next day now responding to your body's cues. Then you're going to start putting everything that we're talking about here into practice. I always say, like, there's no point in me talking if I'm talking into a black hole. It's really important that people start putting very simple things into practice so that it starts to have an effect, starts to have a change. And when people start to feel that in their body, like, that's agency, you know?
Yes.
So I'd say, you know, I'd say the final two things is pee when you need to pee and drink when you need to drink, you know, drink when you're thirsty.
Yeah. And get yourself your sex journal, which, by the way, if any publishers are listening, you need to get on this with Jenny Keane. Thank you very much. Sex journal, we need this. Also, I'm just very grateful to you. I will never put clothes in the line the same way ever again.
Oh my goodness.
So thank you for that.
I'm going to send you a Christmas present. You won't be hanging on your line, Sheila.
And on that note, thank you so much. I've loved it. You're amazing. I'm delighted to say that Jenny will be back on Ready to Be Real in the new year to answer more of your questions. And next week, I speak to Mark Boyle, also known as the Moneyless Man. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.